If you remember last week, we talked about Satan's first plan, his first step in his plan to beat God. And we talked about the fact that he knew that the way to beat God was through the church. If he could defeat the church, he could defeat God. And since that is his plan, we're just going to have to continue looking at how he expects to do that. Last week we talked about the fact that he wants to keep people out of the church. He wants to keep people away from the church. But that doesn't always work, does it? Sometimes people obey the gospel. Sometimes they become Christians. And the Lord adds them to his church. And Satan, however, is not the type to give up easily. Even when the first step of his plan doesn't work, he has a second step. He has a backup plan. If he can't keep people out of the church, then his second plan is to get them back out of the church. Once people have become Christians, then he wants to get them back out in the world. And one of the things about Satan is that he doubles his efforts. Have you ever seen a sports team who had a hard time in one game and they lost that game? And they come back the next game and they're mad. And they come back and they play twice as hard because they're not going to lose again. They're not going to lose a second game. And so that's what Satan does. When his first plan fails and he loses that first person to the Lord, and this person becomes a Christian, instead of Satan going, "Well, give up on that one," he says, "No, I'm going to try twice as hard now. You made me mad. I'm going to do everything I can to get them back." And so that is Satan's second step in his plan, is to get those of us who have become Christians back out of the church and back into the world. And he can focus extra energy and extra attention on us, and we talked about it a little bit in class this morning. But he has the extra time to work on us because those folks that are out in the world, he's already got. He doesn't have to spend a lot of time on them unless he sees one of them beginning to study and go to church and learn about Jesus. Then he'll focus on them a little more. But as long as they're out there partying, having a good time, following his plan, he doesn't waste any time on them. In fact, a lot of them are actually helping him. So he not only does he not have to spend time on them, but they're helping him with other folks. But the folks in the church, he wants to get them back. Satan wants to be undefeated. He doesn't want to see a single person in heaven. Those that have already passed on and that were right with God when they died and they're on their way to heaven, Satan doesn't want anybody else to join that number. He doesn't want anybody else to make it to heaven. He's already mad enough about the ones that are there, that are already died and out of his reach. Hebrews chapter 3 warns us. You know, I think that some people have come up with the doctrine that it's impossible to fall from grace because they don't want to think about Satan being able to win them back. But if we think about it for just a minute, almost everything that we ever do in life can be undone. It can be destroyed. Whatever we build can be torn down. Whatever action we take can be overthrown and somebody else can undo everything we've worked hard for. Why do we think that wouldn't be the same way in the religious realm? Satan's out there to make sure that we don't make it to heaven. Hebrews chapter 3 and verses 12 through 15. If ever there was one verse that made it so clear that we can go from a saved relationship with God to being lost again, this passage does so. Take heed, brethren. Notice the Hebrew writer first addresses, these are brethren. He's not talking to people out there in the world. He's talking to Christians. These are folks who have been saved. And he says, take heed, brethren, lest there be in any of you. So he's talking about us as Christians. He says, you be careful because it's possible that in one of you sitting here this morning, there may be an evil heart of unbelief in departing from the living God. You see, it's not possible to depart from someone you were never with. So not only does he call them brethren, not only does he say you, he then says, you're departing. There may be some of you who have an evil heart where you've allowed unbelief to replace your belief, and you're departing from the living God. And he warns of that. He goes on to say, but exhort one another while it is called today, lest any of you be hardened through the deceitfulness of sin. For we are made partakers of Christ if we hold the beginning of our confidence steadfast unto the end. See, it's not good enough just to start the race right. We've got to hold on to it to the end. There are a lot of people who start the Christian race. Don and the kids were at a camp this past week. And for the little ones, they had a little Olympics. Tiny Tots Olympics, I think they called them, and they got to do little activities, and they did all other different little things, and in the process of those things, if they just showed up and participated, they'd get an award, a certificate for participation. Well, in Christianity, there's not going to be a place in heaven for participation. There's only going to be room in heaven for those who have a certificate of completion. Participating is not enough. We've got to complete the course. Now, we don't have to be perfect in it. You know, you can get an A in school even if you don't get 100. And you can pass even if you miss some questions. And God's the same way. He knows we're going to miss some sometimes, but we have to complete it. How many folks can go the first 2 weeks of school and then drop out and then expect to get a diploma at the end of the year? No, it doesn't work that way. And in the same way as Christians, if we start the race but we don't finish it, that's not going to get us a reward in heaven. We've got to finish the course, steadfast unto the end. And he says in verse 15, while it is said, today if you will hear his voice, don't harden your hearts as in the provocation. And he points back to those people of Israel in the wilderness. Didn't they all leave out of Egyptian slavery? Yes, they did. Did they all make it to the promised land? No, they didn't. Of a little over a half a million that left out of men. Half a million men, about 600 and some odd thousand, that left out from Egypt. You know how many of those men got to see the promised land? Two of them. Well, weren't they saved when they did the Passover feast and Pharaoh let them go and God got them across the Red Sea and he said, you're never going to see Egypt again? And yeah, they were saved from Egyptian bondage. But they didn't make it to the promised land. They fell in the wilderness because of their sin. Several different times, they rebelled against Moses. They disobeyed God. They refused to go into the promised land the first time when they had the opportunity. And so God struck them down in the wilderness. And only the two, Joshua and Caleb, who were right with God all the way from beginning to end and said, yes, we can take the land. Yes, we can do what God said we can do. Be faithful to Him. Don't let the size of those people over there scare you. God's with us. Those were the two that made it. Had to wander for 40 years in the wilderness with the rest of those wicked folks. But they made it. And the next generation rose up and went into the land. But that generation that left Egypt didn't get to make it. And the same thing can happen to us. We may leave the bondage of sin. But during our wanderings in the wilderness of this life, we may return to sin and bondage again. We may leave Christ. And we've got to watch out for that. Satan tries to get us back. And we're going to look at several ways. We're actually going to have to cover a lot, and we're going to do it quickly, because there are 11 on our list. And the first one is that he tries to get us back by using all the tools that he used to keep people out in the first place. So all those same temptations, the same threats and promises and trickery that he used in the first place to keep people out, he's going to still keep using those on people who are Christians to try to get them back out. So all the things we studied last week, he's not going to give up on those. He's going to keep using them. We're going to run over them just real quick. He's going to use sinful enticements. He's going to use worldly pleasures. He's going to use all of the counterfeit churches that he's created through man to try to confuse us and get us away from Christ's true church. He's going to magnify our faults and sins to make us feel like we're not worthy and that we need to just give up and go on. He's going to lie about the importance of the church. He's going to convince us. Satan's the one that came up with that lie that once you've been saved, you can't be lost, because he knows that folks think they're going to be saved no matter what, then they think they can go do whatever they want to do. He comes up with all kinds of lies to get people to do what he wants them to do. He's going to distort God's truth, just like he did to keep people out of the church. He's going to do it for those who are in the church. He's going to come up with all sorts of twists on the scriptures to try to make things his way instead of God's way. He's going to tout tolerance instead of obedience. He's going to continue to exchange good for God. He's going to have us so wrapped up in all sorts of good activities that we forget about doing what God wants us to do. And I've seen some churches that do just that. Boy, they've got blood drives going on. Come volunteer and give blood. And they've got bake sales going on. And they've got yard sales going on. And they've got a food pantry, and they've got a closed closet, but they're not preaching the gospel. They're not teaching people about Jesus. And what's that going to accomplish? Food and clothes and giving blood is not going to get us to heaven. It's Christ's blood that He already gave that's going to get us to heaven. I don't have anything against somebody donating blood. I've done it several times myself. It's great. When Dawn was in the hospital and needed some blood, I was glad that there were some folks who had given some blood so she could have it. But we've got to understand the difference between doing good things and doing God's things. But he's going to try to use that. He's going to promote procrastination. Oh, well, I'll go to church next Sunday. Not today. It rained this morning. I'm not going to get out today. I'll go next week. He's going to use that procrastination to get us out of the church. He's going to use, of course, self-reliance and egotism. Because, well, I don't need to call the police. I can handle this by myself. And we get ourselves into trouble and wind up leaving the church over it. Didn't I say he was going to double his efforts? There's 10 things that he used on us before we became Christians to keep us from becoming Christians. And he still keeps using those same 10 things, but now he's going to add 10 more to it. We've got 10 more things that he's going to try to use to get us out of the church. Now, these are some things that he couldn't really use on people that were outside the church, although some of them he might could have, but he's going to cause frustration, discouragement, and depression. He is an expert at getting people to see the bad things that are going on in their lives and getting them to be so negative about what's happening to them that they get depressed and discouraged and want to give up. Perfect example of this from the Bible is Elijah. Elijah on Mount Carmel in 1 Kings 18 defeated hundreds of Baal's prophets in front of everybody. He prayed for God to bring down fire, and God did. And everybody saw it, and they killed all of the false prophets, and they said, "We're going to serve the Lord now." And then he prayed and asked God to end the drought that had been going on for 2.5 to 3 years. And that ended, and the rains came. So in chapter 19, he's having a celebration party, right? Afraid not. In chapter 19, he's running and hiding in a cave. And he's saying, "God, I'm the only one left, and they're trying to kill me." And he's depressed, and he wants to give up. You ever felt that way? You ever been depressed? He just had this great victory. Sometimes when we have a great victory, we feel we kind of have a letdown afterwards. That happened to Elijah. And he wanted to give up. He wanted to quit. And God finally came to him and he said in 1 Kings 18 and verses 10 and verse 14, he said, "Elijah, what are you doing hiding in this cave?" And he said, "Oh, Lord, they're after me. They're trying to get me. I'm the only one that's left, and everybody else is dead." Now, he knew that that wasn't true because just a few days earlier he had spoken to one of God's faithful followers, Obadiah, who worked in the king's palace and had hidden some of God's prophets from the wicked Queen Jezebel. And he had just talked to Obadiah just a few days before this. He knew he wasn't really alone. Intellectually, he knew it. But we're not just intellectual beings, are we? We're emotional beings. And sometimes, even though we know it, we don't feel like it. We can know that we are right with God. We can know that we've been obedient to Him. We can know that we're saved. But still not feel like it. We can still feel bad and feel lost and feel separated from God. David in the Psalms wrote, my God, why hast thou forsaken me?" God hadn't forsaken David. If anything, David might have forsaken God on a few occasions, but God never forsook David. In fact, in the history of time, the only one of God's people that he ever forsook was his own son on the cross. And he did that so that he wouldn't have to forsake us ever. But we sometimes still feel that way, don't we? We get frustrated when we try to study with somebody and they shut us out. We feel like we're the only one trying to do it. And where's everybody else? Why isn't anybody else helping with this? We get discouraged. And we get down. And we feel like Jeremiah and we say, "I'm just going to quit trying too." But Jeremiah couldn't quit trying. He said the Word of God was like fire in my bones. I had to let it out. I said I wasn't going to do it, but I couldn't hold it in. And we've got to do that too. But Satan is an expert at using depression and frustration and discouragement to get us down and make us want to quit. And there are a lot of people who do quit. A lot of people quit because of their discouragement. They just can't do it anymore. They give up. But then the third thing that we want to notice is Satan tries to get us back by causing strife, envy, and division. It's one of his greatest tools. Animosity between Christians. I think y'all studied about that last week in the adult class. I wasn't here for it, but I hear you had a lively discussion about division in the church. It's a dangerous thing because it's a tool of Satan. It's his goal to divide the church as much as he can. 1 Corinthians 1:10 warns us about that, about the dangers of that division. He wants us to be fighting against each other. He loves strife. You see, one of the things that God hates is someone who stirs up strife or hatred between brethren. Well, anything God hates, the devil loves. So the devil loves it when people stir up strife and hatred between brethren. That's what he likes. For any reason. He doesn't care whether it's something important or something insignificant. He just loves the division and the fighting. And the devil is the kind of fella who will argue with you until you agree with him, and then he'll turn around and take the other side and argue the other way. Just to keep the fighting going. You ever met somebody like that? That's the way the devil is. And he likes to get us going at each other like that. He wants to try to divide us and separate us. He wants us to envy each other. Well, so-and-so's got a better house than I do. So-and-so's got a better car than I do. So-and-so's got a better job than I do. So-and-so's got this. So-and-so's got that. And we get all envious at each other about what somebody else has that we don't have. And we get jealous. That's Satan working. And he gets some people to leave the church because of that division that he causes. When there's strife and turmoil in a church, people don't like to be around that. They leave. And he wins. When it comes to division in the church, the devil's the only one who wins. When we're fussing and fighting and arguing and trying to win the argument, we may win the argument, but we'll lose the war. Number four, tries to get us back by causing judgmentalism. I don't think that's a real word, but I used it anyway. And negativity. Has somebody ever said something to you that was just mean? Has somebody judged your motives when you were trying to do the best you could do, but they judged your motives because your actions didn't turn out the way you wanted them to, or something to that effect? Oh, that happens sometimes. The Pharisees were experts at that, weren't they? They didn't like John because John didn't eat and drink. They said, there's something wrong with him. He's possessed. He's a madman. Well, so Jesus comes along and he does eat and drink. And they said, well, look at him. He's a glutton and he's a wine bibber. It didn't matter what God gave them. They were going to be judgmental about it and look at the negative side of it. Now, there are things that are negative in this world. There are things that we have to judge one way or another on things. That's true. We have to. But we have to avoid being judgmental people and being negative people. We have to look at the positive. Philippians 4:8 tells us that we need to be looking at the good things, the pure things. If there's anything worthy of praise, that's what we need to be thinking about. That's what we need to be looking for. We need to watch out. But then he tries to get us back by changing the church into a denomination. He's constantly at work trying to get the church to leave the Scriptures and go toward man's doctrine. And he wins sometimes with some churches. There are hundreds of denominations where the devil's won. And there are hundreds of churches that used to be churches where the Bible was taught that have left the Bible to teach man's teaching. And that happens. And Satan's happy when that happens. He wants the church to call itself after different people. We saw that in 1 Corinthians 1 there, as he talks about the division. He says, you know, some of you say, I'm of Paul and I'm of Apollos. Is Christ divided? But that's exactly the kind of thing that Satan wants us to be doing. Following men. Thinking more highly of men than of Christ. Then we see that Satan tries to get us back by trials, tribulation, and persecution. He wants us to give up. Do you remember the sower? And he sowed the seed. Some landed on the path. And the devil got that before it could even get into the ground because the path was hard. But then some fell on the rocks. And those that sprang up. But then as soon as the hard times came, as soon as the sun came out bright in the summer, it withered away because it didn't have any depth of root. That's kind of the way we planted some azalea bushes out here, and about not many of them survived. It was too hard, and they couldn't grow roots, and most of them died. We got one or two that survived on that hard ground. You get down here, down on the softer ground, where the water comes better, they grew better. But in that hard ground, and you can see some places out there in the yard, even the weeds won't grow. And you know the soil is bad when the weeds won't even grow. But some will spring up, but then when the sun gets hot and the summers get dry, they don't have enough root to survive. And they don't make it. And sometimes we can have that happen to us. Along that line as well, he uses the temptations there of the world, the thorny ground. Some of us may be into that situation, with that the cares and the troubles of the world. You know, some folks, because of all the turmoil that goes on in the world, because of the economic problems, instead of turning to God, they turn away from God. They lose their job and they blame God. They lose a family member, blame God, and they turn away from God. Then, number seven, we see that Satan tries to get us back by creating doubts. Oh, he's good at causing doubt. Well, how do you know? How do you know that's right? That might not be right. You might be believing something that's not true. You may not really be saved. And he sticks those doubts in there. And he tries to create doubt in God. Well, what if God's not really up there listening to your prayer? What if you're just talking to the ceiling? There's no God up there. And he has helpers that help him with that too. He's got all these scientists that are constantly telling us how we evolved and that God didn't create us. We just evolved from sludge and the mud in the ground. And they're constantly pouring it to try to make us doubt God. There are constantly things, you know, you see documentaries. Well, did Jesus really rise from the dead, or have we found his bones? Oh, well, if Jesus didn't rise from the dead, then why am I following? He's not really the Savior then. And what about the lost books of the Bible that you don't have, and they tell us a different story? What about that Gospel of Judas that tells us how Jesus was really a wicked fellow, and Judas was trying to do what was right to protect, and he was the good guy? And what about that? And the devil's constantly bombarding us with all of these things to try to create doubt, to get us to wonder if what the Bible says is really true, to wonder if there's really a God up there, to wonder if we're right to believe what we believe. And number eight, Satan tries to get us back by encouraging ecumenicalism. That's a big fancy word that basically just means people from different beliefs getting together as though there's no difference. It's weird because Satan will use division on the one hand, but then he'll turn right around and try to use unity and diversity to try to get us to believe that it doesn't matter what you believe. As long as you're sincere, it's okay. And we're all sincere. We all are serving the same God, and he tries to get us to believe that. We're just taking different paths to heaven. But Jesus didn't talk about different paths. He talked about one way. He talked about a narrow way that leads to life. Just one. He didn't talk about a bunch of different paths to get there. He said, I am the way and the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father but my... He didn't talk about you can go several different paths and get to the same place. But the devil encourages that kind of thinking. That we're all in this together. We all believe in the same God. We all worship the same God. Well, if we do, then how come we're worshiping in 55 different ways every Sunday? Because God is not the author of confusion, but of peace. And He only gave us one set of instructions for following Him. It'd be somewhat like if we sat down to play a game, and I sat down with my deck of cards, and you sat down with your dice, and another person sits down with their board game, and somebody else sits down with their Nintendo, and they say, well, we're all playing the same game. We're not playing the same game. We may all be playing games, but we're not playing the same game. And in the same way, people may be worshiping every Sunday, but they're not worshiping God. Not worshiping Him in spirit and in truth. May they be worshiping Him in vain. Number 9, Satan tries to get us back by developing pride and arrogance. Oh, he wants us to be so proud of ourselves. Proverb writer tells us a number of times of the danger of pride. Paul also warns of it when he talks about the qualifications for an elder, that he need beware that he's not a novice, lest he being lifted up with pride, he falls into the trap of Satan. The proverb writer tells us that pride goes before destruction and a haughty spirit before the fall. One of Satan's best tools is to get people so arrogant, so proud of themselves, that they won't depend on God, and they think they can get themselves to heaven. I promise you, none of us can get to heaven by ourselves, because we don't know how to get there without God. Unless Jesus tells us how to get there, we'd never find it in a million years. We wouldn't find the path. Not going to get there by accident. But He has deceived so many in so many of these ways. And then He does it by keeping us isolated. Oh, if He can separate us. Have you ever thought about the way that a pack of wolves hunts down their prey? Now we know a lion, a big old strong lion, he just goes and attacks one of the animals. He can do that because he's bigger and stronger than the animal he's attacking. But here's a little wolf that weighs maybe 60 or 70 pounds. And here's a great big ox of some kind or some sort of big animal that weighs 1,500 or 2,000 pounds. Now how's that little 70-pound wolf going to take down that great big 1,500-pound animal? Well, he's not. But he's got a bunch of friends. Now, there may be a whole herd of those animals. And those wolves know that if they go in there, 20 of the wolves against 30 or 40 of those oxen or whatever they may be, they know they're not going to win that. So they go and find and try to start, you know, getting them riled up until one kind of splits off by himself. And when they get that one isolated, then they surround him so he can't get back to the group. And then they come running nipping. And one will come and bite him on the hindquarters on one side. And then when he turns around, the other will come and bite him on the shoulder over here. And he turns back to that. Somebody gets him underneath the belly. And they just rip and tear with their teeth until finally that great big animal just bleeds to death and falls. And then they can eat him up. Well, the devil knows if he can get us isolated, if he can get us separated from the group, then he can get us surrounded by some of his wolves, and they'll get us. So he knows what he's doing. He keeps us isolated. And then we see that he tries to get us back by hindering our spiritual growth. You see, he knows if we grow big and strong, that we'll be able to defeat him. We'll be able to withstand his attacks. But he knows if he keeps us weak and immature, He'll be able to get us more easily with any of the tools that He's got at His disposal. You ever notice that little children get tired quicker? You know, you go on a long hike, the little three-year-old's going to be tired and wanting you to carry them before long. The healthy, mature person can handle that better. Well, spiritually, the same thing is true. He wants us to get weary. And sometimes we get weary. Galatians 6:9 warns us of the danger that we can get weary, and even in doing good things, we can get worn out. And the young and the weak are more easily worn out. But He hinders our spiritual growth by continuing to keep us loving the things of the world too. 2 Timothy 4:10 talks about Demas departed from Paul because he loved the present world too much. He would stick with it. And then he'll use money. He'll use our job. Oh, yeah, you've got to work overtime. You've got to do this. You've got to do that for your job. You don't have time to be studying that Bible. You don't have time to be going to... You've got to keep busy with it because you've got to make this money to do this payment. And He keeps us focused on that. He uses that money against us. He uses that job against us to keep us from growing spiritually. And we may be doing well physically, but not be doing well spiritually because of that. 1 Timothy 6:10 warns us that loving money, not only is it the root of all kinds of evil, but many have lost their faith. They've left the faith because they were chasing the dollar. Now, Paul didn't mention the dollar because they weren't around back then. But he said they left following money. And that can happen to us. We've got to beware. So not only does Satan use those 10 things that he used to keep people out of the church, he adds 10 more of those things to it. 10 more tools at his disposal to try to complete his second step, which is to get us out of the church. Don't let him win. Don't let him succeed in either keeping you out of the church, if you're not a Christian. Don't let him do that. But go into the church knowing once you get in there, he's going to double his efforts to get you back out. Don't go ignorantly. Count the cost. No, it's not an easy path. It's not always a bed of roses and no thorns. Satan is going to try harder. If you're in the church, don't let Satan get you back out. You've done the hardest part, which is getting away from him in the first place. It's hard to get away from the devil. He doesn't want to let you go. But once you've gotten away from him, don't let him get hold of you again. Because I'll promise you this. It's a lot harder to get away from the devil the second time than it was the first time. You think it was hard the first time around getting away from him? You get back in his clutches again, he's going to be twice as hard trying to keep you from it because he knows you got away once. You ever seen that prisoner escape? Well, then they double the guard on that prisoner, don't they? We escaped Satan once. If he ever can get us back under his control, he's going to do everything to make sure we don't get away a second time. So it's always easier to stay with the Lord and stay out of his clutches than it is to try to get away a second time. Don't get entangled back in the world. If you're here and you have a need to respond in either of these ways, we ask that you do so as we stand and as we sing.